everybody. I'm Rose and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is October 2nd, 2017. My home group is the North Raleigh group. We have a beginners meeting at 8:30 a.m. on Saturday mornings, and immediately following that, there's a men's meeting. We have a Tuesday night meditation at 7 p.m., and at Wednesday, there's a big book study over there. So it's a busy, busy, beautiful little chapel way out Creedmoor Road, and we hope that you all stick around long enough to make it out there a time or two. Thanks, Danta, for your service in getting some people here, and thanks everybody that came to enjoy all the food. Thanks to everybody who was in service to AA and bringing some food. It was way delicious. And like, I eat keto these days, and sometimes you're just out of luck. Sometimes you're like, oh, no, but there was so much meat in there. And I had plenty of it. So the first time I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was 29 years old. It was 1994, and I came in with a very strong desire to quit drinking, and I did. I kept the plug in a jug for 22 years, but I did not work the steps. So I was emotionally a basket case, but I'm a real good actress. And so I fully immersed myself in the fellowship. I had roommates and best friends. I met a man who I'm still married to now in the rooms. And long story short, at about 10 years sober, he and I dashed off into the sunset. And so I, for 12 years, I kind of emotionally burned down. And I eventually drank again. I pulled one drunk at the holidays in 2016, and I got back into the program. I continued to smoke weed for 10 months. And when my sponsor suggested I start my fourth step, I brought her my bag of weed, and I put it all to bed. I put all the mind-altering stuff to bed. And that was about the best thing I've ever done. So I had a belly full of AA. And that's, I think, one reason why when I got back here, as a 50-year-old instead of a 29-year-old, I sort of understood better that something had to change, and a lot of stuff had to change. So I did get into service immediately. I pulled my drunk on a Monday. I was drunk before noon on a Monday, and because that's what, you know, that's what alcoholics do. And on Tuesday, I went to a meeting called Epiphany over at Five Points in Hayes Barton Baptist, and it's no longer there. It didn't make it through COVID, but immediately I have a sore throat, so I'm going to keep drinking water. And so I noticed that these two guys, there were two guys in the meeting, and I knew enough about how it worked, well, how, you know, meetings and stuff worked. Somebody was in charge of the money, and at this particular meeting, they used to pass a service calendar, and you could sign up to chair the meeting or sign up to bring some cookies to the meeting, or you could sign up to set up, which required, like, getting there 45 minutes early. Ooh. And, you know, not such a scary thing, really, if you think about it. But so I kind of watched those guys pass the calendar and watched those guys take up the money, and thought, I need to get into service. So I started signing up on that calendar to bring cookies. And it literally, you know, I don't recall, it was no big white light moment for me, but it made me feel a part of, I'll just say that. Kind of made me feel a part of, because I would homemade cookies, you know, and people were like, girl, do you make those macadamia nuts? Like, yeah, and you know what? I learned people's names like that. It automatically brought me into connection with people in the rooms, because we'd talk about the damn cookies. And if that's what it takes to keep a drunk sober one day at a time, I'm on the cookie train. So I was out of my mind, but, you know, I brought the cookies and did those sorts of things and eventually stopped smoking pot and got myself a sponsor. And I started working those steps, you know, and I've made some notes here, but God, I can't read my own notes. What does that even mean? I don't even know what that means. Okay. Anyway, I think it means I was going to about 8 meetings a week. So I was going to Epiphany on Tuesday and Thursday. I started going to Oasis out in North Raleigh on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And eventually I started going to Early Risers, which is a fabulous old timers meeting. Ooh, there's some grumpy old men in there. And some grumpy old dudes, G-O-D. And so in fact, when I was out of my mind, I got shut down by those guys. I was like, you know, they're like, thanks, Rose, but just let somebody else share, whatever. My sponsor suggested I keep going back to that meeting. And I became a cookie person at Early Risers, and they had never really had one before. And I swear, I really befriended, I really came into the good graces of some old timer ladies who were like happy to see some cake back at the meeting and stuff. You know, it was just a way that I connected. So I worked the steps, all 12 of them, in order with my sponsor. And eventually, you know, I'm getting well connected. I've got a year sober. I've got a year and a half sober. And the guy, I noticed, or I, you know, I started understanding better that the meeting epiphany and the group epiphany were two totally different things. That group was on a shoestring. That guy that was passing the calendar around previously was out the door. Some of those ladies who were at that meeting in that little tiny room, they changed to a big room where apparently it was too cold to go to an AA meeting, and they all quit going. And then I met like a whole string of people in the next couple of years who had gotten really pissed off at that meeting. Danta might be one of them. Because everybody was, I mean, I'm just saying, everybody, if you got in there and you were doing service at Epiphany, you were by yourself. So I literally, that guy was like, I can't stand it anymore. I just can't do it. You know, I said, is there some way I can help you? I could be a treasurer. I mean, I could collect the money. It was such a small meeting, it wasn't even enough money to steal. So I was like, I can do that. So I became the treasurer of Epiphany. And the thing was, the meeting was attached to a dining space that had booths and a full kitchen, and they would just let us do our thing. And I was like, party on, AA people. And every holiday, for like 2 years, I guess, or 3 years or something, every holiday we'd have a 4th of July party, we'd have a people would bring food. We wore costumes on Halloween. We were like that AA meeting. And I didn't feel at the time like I was in service to AA. I felt like I was keeping myself away from a drink one day at a time, that I was just taking suggestions. It was completely different than when I was here the first time. The only suggestions I took was don't drink and go to a meeting. And I did that gladly, but nobody was going to tell me what to do otherwise. So my sponsor kept me busy, suggested I become the treasurer, you know, that whole thing, and I did. And eventually COVID happened. When Zoom is, you know, not Zoom is not for everybody, but I really took to Zoom. I really, really liked it. I sponsored people on Zoom. And when I finished working the steps with my sponsor, she said, now, the next time you're at a meeting and they say, who's willing to be a sponsor, you raise your hand. I was like, holy crap, are you kidding me? And the first few sponsees I had, I went through what I think it's pretty typical. I was like, she's gonna get drunk, I'm gonna be so mad, she's gonna, you know, or whatever. And it's not like that anymore. I can calmly support women who want to stop drinking one day at a time and want to work those steps one at a time in the order they were written, go to 3 to 5 meetings a week, you know, that whole thing, build a network and stuff. So I'm a little better at that. I, in fact, in Zoom, they even taught me, the guys that started the Zoom that I went to chaired it on, off, 7 days a week for almost a whole year. Almost a whole year before they even started asking for people to help with it. And so I was like, I'll chair, you know, but I mean, I don't really know how or whatever. Not only did they teach me all the, you know, that it required to, that's my technical term, you know, to do that, they taught me how to use the slides, right? Have y'all ever been on a Zoom meeting and they have slides up in there? I know how to do that, which is amazing to me. I barely graduated from high school. So, you know, so, and I could put like, you know, seasonally themed colors on the slides and stuff, which made me feel really good. And made me feel really connected to the people that were coming into those meetings. And I watched lots and lots and lots of people get sober and stay sober on Zoom. So, if you don't think Zoom works. But, I know. So, when we came out of Zoom, Epiphany just was not going to make it. I was literally, and it's too long a story to get into, but we ended up donating the money to the money that was left in the bank account ended up being donated to the church because they've been so good to us for many years. Early Risers moved over to that church, and I made Early Risers my home group. And I asked them for a service position, and they're crusty, man. They're crusty over there at Early Risers. I mean, they're some of my best friends in the world. That's why I can talk shit about them like that. But I was like, I need a service position. And this gal was like, okay, you can get the chips from the inner group, you know? And I was like, okay. And it was so not satisfying. Although I did it diligently, they never went without chips when that was my service position, but it was only for about 3 months. Because I was like, I want some beef, you know, I want some service beef, man. I want to make some difference in here. So I've been occasionally going to the North Raleigh group, to that Saturday beginners meeting, and I made that my home group because I kind of started looking around and poking around. And currently, there's 22 working service positions at that home group. I mean, they do it all. They go into the prisons. They man the hotline. We have, you know, just the CCPI, which I can never, you know, I can never say that right. It's probably not right. All kinds of stuff. Treasurer, secretary, chair people. And my service position is I get the cups. But this is the thing. I love a party. I love a picnic. I love to make a cake. I mean, really, I'm going back to the cookies again. I've always, even when I was drunk as a skunk, always liked to clean up at the party and hostess and, you know, that whole thing. So why not utilize that energy in this program? Because people need some coffee at the meeting, you know? So I don't say this out loud. When we're in our business meeting and we go around the room and introduce ourselves and say our service position, I say, I get the cups. But you, this privileged audience tonight, I'll tell you what I really do. I get the cups, I get the coffee, I get the creamer, I get the sugar, I get the sweet and low, I get the equal still, people eat that stuff. I get the Splenda, and I, nowadays I get the Stevia for you keto people. And I get the napkins, I get the Keurig freaking things, I get, you know, if we need a little organizer thing, I do that. If the cabinet needs cleaning out, I do that. If the place needs cleaning up where the coffee pots are, I do that. I don't ask anybody if I should do it. I just do it, and I don't tell people that I did it, except in this instance. And I'm not trying to be funny or anything about that, but I keep myself real busy. My home group cuts me a $20 check every month to cover my expenses, and I generally spend about $40 or $50 a month. And I do that gladly with a big heart because I stole so much money and stuff from people. When I was drinking, I spent my entire 20s working cash registers at fast food restaurants and pizza joints and stuff. Dollar for you, dollar for me. Out at the fair, good God, I paid my rent every November with money I stole from the fair. You know? And it sounds a little funny in an AA meeting, and I can say it because I'm not ashamed of it anymore. I'm certainly not proud of it, but it's part of my story. I'm a damn thief. So when they trusted me to take the money up at Epiphany, it was amazing to me. It was miraculous to me. Not so much that they trusted me, because I'd been around AA enough to know, you know, if somebody steals the money from Treasury, generally we go, they just stole it. You know, nobody, I mean, and if they drink again, whatever. None of us have to drink again because somebody stole the damn, and it doesn't happen too much. But I thought, what a wonderful thing that somebody like me can do this. That was the thing. I can be in service in that way. I can scrape up that little $11 and bring it to the bank once a month or whatever. It gave me a good sense of purpose. And the big book tells me I should be useful and effective if I'm going to make anything out of my life, you know. So I have just a couple more minutes. I'll say that, look, I wrote even more things that I do at my home group. Well, I won't tell you those. I'll wrap up with this. I'm an actress. I'm a singer. I sound like a drag queen today, but it has always been my love. It's always been my great passion. And if it hadn't been for music and theater and art, I probably would have killed myself. I would have drunk and drugged a lot harder than I did. All through my 20s, I was in shows, and even in my big 2 decades of dry drunkenness, I was in tons of bands, working bands, writing music, recording music, doing lots of community theater and stuff. So when I got into AA, literally about a year ago, I thought to myself, damn, I wanted to be a rock star, you know, I wanted to be a professional musician, but I guess I'll just be the girl that brings the cookies, you know, this is going to have to be okay with me. And I was ready, that's about to make me cry, because I was ready to accept that. I was like, you know, AA is my rock stardom. I get the cups, and it's important, you know. And then this happened. Somebody rings me one day, a woman who directed me in a show a long time ago, and she was in the program, and she said, do you want to be in a skit? You know, an AA skit at a convention? I was like, well, of course I do. And so I went and did it, and it was incredibly fun. It was so fun. It was called Snow White and the 7 Defects. Y'all Google that thing. I mean, it is hilarious. So I was in it. And when that was done, after the end of the weekend, the woman who had organized that stuff came up to me, and she said, would you like to direct a skit at Lake Junaleska? I remember you from there. At Lake Junaleska next July. I was like, well, of course I do. And so not only did I direct one, I wrote one. And we performed the one that I wrote. And so after I was done, they were like, would you like to be on the committee for skits? And I was like, well, of course I would. And so about the past year, a year and a half, I've been on the committee. So I want you guys to come out to the 77th Annual Convention of AA in North Carolina this July 11th through the 14th at the North Raleigh Hilton. If you register now, it's $35. If you wait a minute, it's $40. On Thursday and Friday nights, we're performing skits. And on one of those nights, we're going to perform one that I'm currently writing called Calamity Jane and Serenity Sue. And it's about two very different women who are at an AA meeting together, and they're both based on me. And one is an absolute wreck, which I was for a long time, and one is a person who's had a spiritual awakening as the result of working those steps. Thanks. Wow.
Thank you, Rose.
Thank you.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is George Shanko. And thanks for inviting me, Danta. And thanks for the dinner. Here to talk about service. And I was thinking about helpline calls that I've gotten from time to time over the years. And anybody who's answered the helpline a few times has gotten this call. The person gets on the phone and they say, yeah, I was wanted to go to one of those AA classes. And I don't usually correct them, but if we have an opportunity to chat for a while, I'll end up sharing with them what to expect at their first meeting. And I'll share with them that in AA we don't instruct. What we do is we share our experience. And so that's what I'm here to do tonight. I thought about the first time I told my story, which my sponsor had me, like several months before I got to 1 year, he had me scheduled to speak at a group. And I shared my story that night, and I've shared it a number of times since then. And the details, the specifics, haven't really changed. They shouldn't. But what has changed are the insights with time and thinking back on things, having more experiences, I get new insights. So that's what I want to share a bit tonight about as well. My service experience and some of the insights that I picked up over the years. I had my last drink on March the 30th, 2002. And I had been going to AA for about 4 years at that point. Never got sober, drank every single day. Picked up chips, like I was doing something, you know. Oh, it's been 30 days, I better pick up a chip. And that sort of thing, but I wasn't sober. And it never once, the whole time that I went to AA before I got sober, it never once crossed my mind what it took to bring everybody in a room like this every week. What it took to have literature there for us. I never got a glimpse or even thought about what goes on behind the scenes. All of the work that people do. Rose mentioned some of it. All of the work people do to make this happen. When I got sober, my sponsor, I really don't remember very clearly our step work, in all honesty. I did it. It was important to do. But what I really remember from that first year is he really focused on helping me understand what it means to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it started with us talking about me getting a home group. And he suggested that I get a home group that had a regular business meeting. And his reasoning was that will give you an opportunity to get a service position in the group. And he also wanted to know, once I picked a home group, my first home group was morning meditation. And he said, so y'all meet every day of the year, right? And I'm like, yep. And he said, how many home group members do you have? And I told him what I reckoned. And then so he kind of like tried to figure out, how often should I chair? So he came up with, you should sign up to chair 3 times a month. And so what he was doing there was he didn't want me to sit there in the back and not do anything, but he also didn't want me to try to run the show. Just take a nice average. That's what you do. And that was an important, I still remember those conversations we had to this day. And I try to pass that on to people that I work with. just a few weeks after I got sober, his name is Jack. I still have the same sponsor. He got a phone call from the intergroup asking if he might have a sponsee who would answer the phone once a month. And he said, yeah, but I haven't done it myself, so I'm not going to ask anybody to do something I haven't done. So he signed up to answer the phones on a Wednesday. And then he called me and he said, suggested that I volunteer to answer the phones one day of the month. And then he followed that with, you're not doing anything anyway, which was true. All I was doing was delivering pizzas at night. And I chose the second Tuesday of the month, and he chose the second Wednesday of the month. And we ended up doing that for the next 7 years. I know I did it for the next 7 years. He did it for a number of years as well. It may have been the same amount. But that was just something that, you know, it was my first experience outside of my home group. It was very early sobriety. I was answering phones. This was before we had a helpline like we do now. And I would get calls from newcomers, and I'd put them on hold and call him. And did you invite him to a meeting? Oh, yeah. And that sort of thing. But that was my first experience in service outside of the group. And in retrospect, what was really important about that was when I did get my first good job in sobriety, I already had that going on. And so it worked like this. I had 3 interviews, and on the 3rd interview, I got a job offer. And I said, by the way, I have this thing I do. I volunteer the second Tuesday of every month from 10 to 2. I didn't tell him what, I just said that. And I said, would that be a problem? And he said, no, we'll work it out. So if we had reversed that, if I had to go get that job like I desperately wanted and gotten myself financially situated before I did service, I wouldn't have had time. You know, who has time? Middle of the week? Are you kidding me? That's a work day. I can't go over there and answer the phone. And like I said, I continue doing it as my life moved forward. That, to me, was the importance of me getting involved in service very early. So that led to me, my first position in the home group as the intergroup rep. And that was right about the time that we were redistricting the area. This group is part of District 34. That didn't exist at the time. It was just one district for the Raleigh area. And I got involved in that because I was at intergroup as an intergroup rep, and I was on all sorts of committees. And there was a point where we had to have every single group in the area vote on a particular thing, and a lot of groups didn't send reps to either district or the intergroup. And several of us took groups to go see. And that, me, I went and visited 5 different groups to get their votes. That was the first time that I was really felt a part of something. I was involved, and it felt good. As that all ended, I became my group's first GSR to District 34, because it was a brand new district. And I started attending the district meeting, and I stayed there 6 years. I was a GSR. I served as secretary and as treasurer of that district. And I would like to tell you that it was just all just wonderful and beautiful, and it wasn't. There was one individual there that I did not get along with at all.
Only one?
Yeah, just one. Yep. I'm sure if that person had left, there would have been somebody else, but at any rate, I did not get along with, and we had a lot of conflicts. And a particular topic came up that I felt was going the wrong direction, and I let it be known, and this individual was on the other side of it, and we went back and forth for a long time, months and months. And there was one particular district meeting where I got angry, and I said some things in anger to this person across the big long table. Y'all still sit at the big long table? Yeah. And I instantly regretted it because I could see the looks on everybody's faces. I got really pissed off and said some things. And I did myself no favors. It doesn't matter what the topic was. It doesn't matter if I was right. None of that mattered. I did myself no favors. And I realized, I started thinking about the idea of the principles over personality over the course of some time after that. And I like, have you ever heard the term, this phrase about courage? It says, courage is not the absence of fear. To put another way, the only time you need courage is when you are frightened. That's the only time it's really necessary. I don't need it if I'm not scared. And it's the same thing with principles over personalities. I don't need to worry about that tradition when I like everybody. I don't need to worry about that tradition when we all are in agreement. When I have to deal with that tradition is when I have a conflict. That's when that becomes important. And if I believe that person is dealing in bad faith, I have to double down on principles over personalities. It becomes even more important. I can't ever say it doesn't apply here because this person did this or whatever. And that was a real important thing for me to learn, because it's easy to throw those things out when I'm angry. It's real easy. So I had another opportunity. My time at the district ended, and I was back over at Intergroup. I was the web committee chair. We had a web committee back then, and I was the web committee chair, so I was on the steering committee, and a particular topic came up, and it was quite contentious, and it went on for months and months. We had sharing sessions and all sorts of stuff. We had outside guests come in to moderate and mediate, and very contentious time. And I had some very strong views about the direction that I thought things were going. I did, and still do, think that the direction it was going was not in accordance with our traditions. And then we came up to finally a vote. And I was one of two people that voted against the motion. So that was about 45-2. So that would be substantial unanimity. And it came time for the minority opinion. And I had already expressed myself many times over the previous 6 months, so I said nothing. And then I had an opportunity, and this is something I could not see this hat coming, but another motion was put forth right then to form an ad hoc committee in order to implement this new policy. And I was sitting there thinking about our ultimate authority as a loving God as expressed through our group conscience. And I'd never had a problem with that until that moment. I really didn't. It's a group conscience. And when I was in the majority, the group conscience was, of course, a loving God. And I remember sitting there thinking, so what does this mean? do I have to support this? And for some reason, I put my hand up to join the ad hoc committee to implement this policy that I, to this day, don't think was right. And I joined that ad hoc committee and did the work to support the motion. I share this because this is so different from my experience at the district, where I let my anger come out and my opinion was more important. And so I had an opportunity to work with these folks. And you know, the specifics of all of that, the details have long been forgotten. But I'm still friends with the people that I had the opportunity to work with there. You know, we formed good relations. So that was my experience over there. I spent a few more years at Intergroup and had an opportunity to be a GSR again and for my current home group, which is Prodigious Results in District 35. And my first position there was workshop coordinator, and then I became the alternate DCM in the DCM. And that got me involved in Area 51 service structure. And I started talking to folks and getting to know some people who had a lot of experience. And the topic of right of decision came up. And I had an idea of the right of decision that I was very comfortable with. It was the idea that I had had since getting into AA and getting involved, that as a GSR, I represent my group. As a DCM, I represent my district. Our area delegate represents Area 51. And several past delegates, as well as trustees that I talked with, said, no. That's not how it works. Each of those positions represent AA as a whole. And I was confused, and I was surprised at how resistant I was to this new understanding. And I'm going to share with you why I'm bringing this up. The idea that, like, you know, I go to vote and I vote for my congressman, and that congressman represents me, right? That's how I kind of thought of AA. And what they were saying to me was that, no, we all represent AA as a whole. We each have a right of decision. You go to your group and you get informed by them, but it's your decision as the trusted servant. And that made me really uncomfortable. And then as the DCM, we had a Zoom thing set up, and I invited a AA trustee from Canada on just to talk to the GSRs, and I brought up the topic, and she explained the same exact thing. And so I made a change at the district as the DCM. Rather than take a vote on the agenda items, I said, let's have a sharing session. You guys let me know what your group is thinking about this. And we went around and had a sharing session. We didn't have a vote. And I realized that that's precisely what we do at the pre-conferences. Some of you may be aware that we have some pre-conferences coming up. And there are some agenda items coming up from the General Service Conference that concern me a great deal, actually. How do I have a voice in that? How do I let anybody know? Because we don't get a chance to vote on that. It doesn't come to the assembly. It doesn't come to our home groups. And the way we let our opinions know is to go to the pre-conference, and our delegate stands there and she listens to us. She has the right of decision. She'll go to New York and she'll make her vote. But that is our opportunity as AA members. And I bring this up because we have a pre-conference coming up next week. The Eastern Pre-Conference is going to be, I think it's the 6th in Greenville. And then Stanley, when's the Central in Durham? The 20th?
23rd.
I'm sorry?
23rd.
23rd. So there's an opportunity for each and every one of us to go speak not as a home group member, but as a member of AA, and say what we think about the agenda items that are coming up. And it's important. A year from now, 2 years from now, you're going to see literature that comes from this General Service Conference. And this is our opportunity to have some say in that. But it's really changed the way I see is my role. It makes it far more serious now for me. I remember commenting to one of the past delegates that I was talking to. I was like, wow, it's really important. We choose the right person. And he's like, yeah, kind of is. So at any rate, yeah, that's been my experience over the last 20 years or so of being in service. The impact for me, there's a thing that I like to read. It's one of my favorite lines in our literature. And it's from the 12 and 12 in step 8. And let me see if I can find this. It's the one, here it is. Defective relations with other human beings have nearly always been the immediate cause of our woes, including our alcoholism. That's a really powerful line, and I remember the first time I read it, and it really caught my attention because it said my alcoholism. You know, I thought it was my alcoholism that caused the defective relationships. And when I really look back on it, that's not the truth. One way you want to work on defective relationships and having effective relationships, get involved in service. It will get your attention. So at any rate, I didn't really have anything specific prepared. I just thought I would talk a little bit about what I've done and what it's meant to me over the years. So that's all I have. Thank you.